Good morning. Today is a Tuesday. 16th of May. Joining us this morning, Eddie Tanner from the UC Cooperative Extension at Spruce Point.
So good morning, Brian.
You get all the goodies that What's-Her-Name gets, except that last little thing, boss.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, happy to be here again.
Yeah. You know, what's really beautiful is we know that she's listening, but she can't have any access to us.
I'll hear about it later, I'm sure.
Okay, fine. I probably won't. Are you? Oh, let's see. Is this? No. Almost had a plant-related.
Okay. I was going to say, pick one I know, maybe.
Well, it said sucker, but it's not like right. A sucker root or anything. Why do we say somebody knows no beans?
Knows no beans.
No, that's not close enough, too. Okay, left holding the bag. There we go. We'll go with that. Why do we say someone is left holding the bag?
I always thought that was like a failed bank robbery thing.
Rural America in the 19th century had no fraternities or sororities, but hazing was a common ritual. Often it involved taking an adolescent to hunt an imaginary bird, the snipe. Okay, I think we've all heard about that one.
Although they're not imaginary. We've got Western snipes around here.
Easy. Damn boy. Told that the snipe would dash into a heavy-duty bag that is properly held, the victim was made the bag holder. Pranksters said they beat the bushes and drive the snipe into the bag, then slipped away, stifling their laughter. When and where snipe hunting was invented, no one knows, but this rural method of poking fun at a gullible youngster was common. As a result, even in big cities, where no one could wait for the imaginary snipe, a person who is tricked or swindled is said to be left holding the bag.
All right.
This was an East Coast thing. They weren't out here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I've a
smart guy.
Yeah, I've been that person holding the bag.
Oh, I thought you'd back, been on a snipe hunt.
Back in Boy Scouts, yep.
You weren't an Eagle Scout, were you?
No, I didn't actually make it all the way.
Well, that's
sad to say.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, I know that's a big deal.
Right.
So I'm not denigrating that. But it's interesting, those that achieve certain status levels, if that really is a springboard into something, or if that's kind of like the end of the trail. And at that point, okay, I've achieved my life goal and it's over. different strokes. So how you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah. I'm finding some parts of my job that I really like. I think right now the best part of my job is that I'm tasked with kind of learning more about what the specialty crops production in our county looks like. So getting out to farms.
What it does or what it could?
Well, both, certainly, but right now actually mostly connecting with what people are currently doing and listening to the farmers growing fruits, vegetables, flowers, and kind of hearing what the issues are. And so I've been able to get out on site visits, see their farms, you know, see them directly in the field, ask them about their business models, their production practices, and then it's been great for me to be able to feel useful too and plug in for some troubleshooting.
One of the things that is a challenge for our sales folks, and we have a kind of a working phrase, the accidental business person.
Mm-hmm.
Are there accidental farmers also that they just kind of get in? When you were saying how at some of the sophisticated levels or their budgeting and something.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of people, especially if you're talking about first generation farmers, people who are kind of choosing to create farm businesses because they have a passion for it. The business side of things isn't always the first thing on the list, but you know,
like the chef in the restaurant, he opens a restaurant. He knows the backside, but he doesn't know the business side.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And with any small business, you know, all of a sudden you're having to do it all. And luckily there's resources for that. You know, our local small business development center is really good, offering classes on the business side of things. And the North Coast Growers Association as well is reaching out to provide resources to beginning farmers or established farmers who just need, you know, some more support on that side of things.
No, you're not mentioning the UC Cooperative Extension either. What's this about?
Yeah, right. Well, I'm happy to be able to plug into that role as well. And that's actually something I am doing with, the North Coast Growers Association and College of the Redwoods are leading a series of classes that I'm going to be an instructor at some of, geared toward beginning farmers.
That's why I was curious about where the academic is. I mean, you know, a lot of it is certainly getting dirt under your fingernails. I mean, that's the magic of it for a lot of folks. But you still need to have some of that formalized training, that academic, the classroom, at least the exposure to the concept of how you arrive at that determination or that decision to either say yes or to say no to that situation.
Yeah.
What are you looking for out of the classroom information that's being presented?
Yeah, so these particular classes are sort of on the technical side, each covering a subject about farming. And the focus here is climate resilient farming, which really means using resources more efficiently. So I'm going to be
the dry farming.
So, right. It's going to include a class on irrigation, reducing water use. I'm going to be kind of teaching a class on.
We're having no shortage of water.
Well, you know, the summers are dry, though.
Okay. And seasonally.
Yeah. Okay. Seasonally and cyclically, too. You know, we did just come out of a bunch of dry years. So some folks in the river bottoms have better access to water, but that's not the case throughout the county.
And, a little too much during winter.
Yeah, right. So it's
something as simple as site selection. Is that overlooked by a lot of folks?
So site selection obviously is very important, but it also runs into the question of land access. So,
sure.
So for a lot of people who aren't coming from farm families wanting to farm, or if you are in a farm family, you kind of use what you have. So there, but that's definitely going to be a huge consideration in what crops you choose and what your production practices look like.
Exposure and all those types of things that all kind of
sure.
enter into that.
And Humboldt and Del Norte County is very diverse climatically. So, learning your microclimates and trying to find the niche crops that are best in those places.
I would think, particularly if somebody has not been considering or contemplating for any period of time, those microclimates, it's really like a quarter mile. And you go from this to that. And it's amazing how dramatic those differences are. 4 or 5 degrees during the summertime, 10, 15 degrees, wet. Or drizzly, or, the sidewalks are dry.
Right.
Just that simple little stuff.
Oh, yeah.
If you're not paying attention to it.
You know, the good news there is that offers just a lot of crop diversity. So.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19. We'll be back with more from Eddie Tanner.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Eddie Tanner from the UC Extension. He's the plant guy, I guess. Would be
yeah.
A simple way to say it, huh?
Yep.
Maybe we need to change your business card.
The plant guy.
Specialty crop and horticulture advice. Yeah, plant guy. Can you do that?
Plant guy? Yeah, I don't know. But
okay, then you need to have a separate set of cards.
But I definitely like spending my time with plants and the people growing them.
I'm just saying, if you're talking to older folks, what do you got, about a 4-point font here?
Yeah, good point.
Tough to read, dude, or on the backside.
Well, and it's,
maybe
you
say
know,
plant guy.
Yeah,
not
too long of a
it.
Title, too.
Yeah.
So, the catchphrase is farm advisor.
There you go. Looking at the challenges that are out there, you've got the marketplace that's going on, say external. You've got the resources, the fertilizers, the raw materials, can you get a tractor, that kind of stuff. And then you've got the internal battles. How do you start to recognize when you're working with somebody, which of those three areas really is the one that needs most of the attention? It may not be more water on in the field. It could be something entirely different.
Sure. Well, I think that's where my background as a farm owner helps. I've been running a farm business for 15 years. So in this farm advisor position, I'm able to connect with producers, not just on the crop side, but also on the business side. And you know, for the most part, people I think are honest with themselves when they, you know, if they're willing to share with me about their business. Most people sort of know where they're struggling. And if they share that with me, I can
kind of intrinsically they know, or and they just kind of,
yeah, or maybe it just comes
around
out,
the edges,
comes out in the conversation. So
no, I don't have $250,000 to buy that combine.
that's
pretty basic stuff, but I sense you're speaking more of on an intimate level.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of our specialty crop businesses are smaller scale operations, you know, only marginally capitalized. But there's opportunity.
Using the big words again, dude.
But there's opportunity there. Well, you know, within our local marketplace, you know, people are finding a place to sell their produce, and I think there's a lot more room for that as well.
That's how many of the folks that are, we'll just use the general phrase farmer, are full time versus part time versus hobbyist. Do you have any sense?
Yeah, so I'm starting to get a better picture of that as I go out and talk with people. But I would say, you know, a lot of our farmers who are, you know, where you do see their produce at the farmer's market or in the grocery store, they are making a living from farming.
So they have the flexibility of the hours. I've always wondered why farmer's markets, why in the middle of the week?
Yeah.
A lot of consumers are not available then. Okay. And a lot of the farmers aren't, or their laborers aren't, because they're supposed to be out in the field doing the do, right? And have a standing facility for weekends. And that's what's available. That's when I think a majority of the shopping goes on for groceries and stuff. Why not be there when the consumers are there rather than trying to do it for the convenience of somebody else?
Sure. I think some of that is historic with the success and, you know, the longstanding reputation of the Saturday Arcata market. Most
yeah.
of our
So when I do a Sunday market and say,
yeah,
where'd he go?
Yep.
Instead of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you're dealing with...
Yeah. The North Coast Growers Association runs all the markets, and they're... I know they're sort of always getting feedback from the producers and kind of seeing what that looks like, so they would have better information on that than me. But, you know,
From a business model.
From a business standpoint, though, a lot of these are the same people, you know, with a limited staff trying to be in a lot of places, so...
So who's tending the fields?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Often nobody during market days.
That's Well, and labor is a different critter also. You know, if you're a one-man band, okay, fine. You figure out what you need to do and you do it. But if you've got either grandiose dreams or larger plots, or you have to hire somebody, that changes that dynamic significantly. How do you consult people if they are in that growth pattern or they want to, how to start putting together those foundational elements so that they can grow and it's a healthy, sustainable, a healthy growth pattern that can be in place for a long period of time?
Sure. That's a great question. I think a lot of that comes down to sort of fundamental business planning, you know, putting things on paper, saying, okay, well, how much revenue do I need to support an employee right now? And so what crops to what markets are going to get me to that level of growth?
It's not necessary poundage.
No, definitely not. Yeah. So a lot of our small farms can be really profitable because of, direct marketing and niche plantings. So, scale is not always the indicator of business success. And, I think there, you know, fortunately, we do have resources in our community, as I was saying, with Small Business Development Center and North Coast Growers Association, to sort of look at that business side. So there are people who can help with that business planning, and that's something that I'm happy to plug in with producers about, too, if they have sort of questions from the business side.
What about financing?
I'm an employer. Yeah.
Yeah, we think of REDEC and AEDC and some of those that are either gap funders or non-traditional funders. Do banks and credit unions tend to loan, or is it like American Ag Credit and people that specialize in ag specific?
Yeah, I'd say more specialized. American Ag Credit's here locally. There's also a statewide organization California FarmLink that has resources for financing for beginning and small-scale farmers.
So it really is especially niche.
It is.
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Eddie Tanner.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eddie Tanner, farm advisor from Spruce Point. Eddie, as you look at the various communities, as you're now beginning to kind of really understand the nuances, are there distinctions in the cultures as well as distinctions in the opportunities that you see in the two counties?
Sure, that's a great question. Because yes, I would say the answer is definitely yes. We have our sort of historic producers and sort of legacy industries in livestock, dairy, the bulb farming in Del Norte, and then you have the most of my clientele, the specialty crop producers. Some of those are the same people with overlap between them, but I would say that's the minority. In a lot of sense, these are sort of culturally different groups with not a lot of history of interaction, but that's something that I would like to work on changing.
You mean like have a couple barbecues and bring everybody together?
Yeah, or at
sit
least,
around and talk and
exactly
meet
and,
each other,
and even just on a one-on-one level. Right now, you know, a lot of the landowners in the area probably could benefit from either diversifying their cropping with some specialty crops or just leasing land to specialty crop farmers. So some of them are already doing that.
That's what I was wondering. Is there a lot of land that would be, I wouldn't necessarily be fallow, but say if you run cattle on it 3 months of the year, well, there's 9 months of the year that could be utilized possibly for something else. Is there that kind of a connection discussion that's going on?
So I'd like to keep having those discussions for sure, because it does make a lot of sense. A lot of the livestock producers are also periodically renovating fields, which sort of involves the kind of field prep that would allow for some specialty crops to be in there as part of the rotation. Another advisor in my office, Jeff Stackhouse, our livestock and natural resource advisor, he and I have been, you know, having a lot of these conversations about, okay, how do we start making these connections between the people who have all this land and a lot of farming equipment and farming background, but haven't been raising these specialty crops? And how do we sort of blend these communities, or at least, you know, encourage them to diversify some of their cropping practices? So we're actually going to do a trial this summer and into the winter with a sort of niche crop that's overwinter cauliflower. So it's a cauliflower is not, you know, a regular crop around here, but there's some varieties that mature. They sit over winter and mature in the spring at a time when statewide the supply is lower and prices are higher.
Oh, so the timing works.
Yeah, so we're thinking that is potentially a niche for our producers around here. And so we're going to be running some field trials, and that's going to include some sort of historically livestock dairy land.
So the ranchers have got farm implements, but just aren't using them?
So some of them, definitely, certainly the dairymen are also raising forage crops, silage, corn.
Oh, sure, okay, yeah,
crops
feed for the livestock.
Yeah. Right, and a lot of that equipment and, you know, and irrigation practices, a lot of that blends well with other crops as well, but they just don't have a history of raising those crops. So I'm hoping to be able to sort of step in and provide some of that support.
Is it lack of interest, lack of knowledge, lack of available hours to be able to?
Well, that's part of it. Yeah, that's a part we'll have to figure out. You know, these are busy people we're talking about. So that's the question: is do they want to diversify their own operations, or are they willing to lease out a piece of their land for other producers to come in? Because some of those arrangements already exist and seem to make a lot of sense.
So winter cauliflower versus regular cauliflower? I mean, is there, can you tell a distinction at the grocer level?
So the end product is very similar. The difference is just the timing. They are specific varieties that are planted for this purpose, and they allow a harvest at a time of year that there wouldn't otherwise be a fresh cauliflower harvest.
But the consumer, there's no nuance in
nope,
the taste.
Still delicious white cauliflower.
Well, let's call it white cauliflower. Are there a lot of other crops that are potential for our area to be able to kind of backfill in? Because I would think that you'd have people lining up if there's a crop that's available and it's a premium priced and it's in the off season, so mm-hmm. that if they're having to use somebody else's property, it's during the time that they wouldn't be using it.
Right. Well, that's why we were kind of settling on this cauliflower niche for now, just to see how it shapes up. So we'll evaluate those trials, see, you know, run some sort of get an economic picture of it as well and see if it makes sense to scale up. I think one thing to consider is we have opportunities in a couple different markets. We have, you know, this cauliflower might be something that can blow up into sort of an export product for our region, but we also still have a lot of capacity just in our local wholesale to grow more here in Humboldt and Del Norte counties for Humboldt and Del Norte counties.
So the folks aren't having to drive down to the Bay Area to go to the market
right,
to buy the product.
Right, or find trucks to haul the product. And so in those scenarios, we could be growing a lot of crops on these, you know, historically livestock lands.
Historical or currently used as?
Both, right. Yeah, currently.
Probably don't want the cows stomping down your cauliflower.
Yeah, but, you know, there's fencing in those fields and you know, and rotationally.
Fences. There's concept.
There's a lot of reasons why it can make sense to, you know, a lot of those pastures need to be renovated. And if silage crops are going in anyway, I feel like there's actually a lot of synergy to rotate other crops through that land.
Doesn't have to be just the grasses,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. Do you have a punch list of all the different types of crops that could be grown here and trying to then marry them up with the farmers or, I guess, ranchers, maybe if they had interest in trying some of these lower-risk options?
Well, that's something I'm working toward. Yeah. Our geographic isolation is real in terms of, you know, bringing produce to a larger statewide market. You know,
just talk to the beer guys about that.
I mean, yeah.
It's the same scenario.
Right. So I think it'll take a while to find where those opportunities are on that scale to export. And that's why I'm, you know, interested in pursuing that and trialing that with the cauliflower. But I'm also pretty focused on, okay, what can we do to get more of our producers to grow for the local wholesale market? And yeah,
I'm giggling to myself here thinking trial. That is so not me. It would be, give me the list. I'm going to go out. I'm going to find 35 people that are going to do it. We're going to splash. We're going to make it happen instead of wading into the shallow end of the pool. I don't do that one really well. So congrats on doing it that way.
Yeah, that's what this position is for, really, is to be able to sort of take some of that risk away from the producer and support it at a scale, you know, to try it at a scale that's small and low risk, but then be able to collect information from those trials and say, look, we have a proof of concept here.
That's right. You're still the laboratory.
Yeah.
When you say small scale, yeah, I think a lot of us are thinking, okay, maybe 2 acres. Or are you thinking 20 acres or 200 acres, getting it to the point where, okay, now we've got the product. Now it's time to practice the marketing and the distribution channels and really go at it with enough so that somebody's going to give you a return call instead of saying, yeah, I got 5 boxes of this stuff. You want it. I mean, that scale is so small.
Sure. So I think it's just going to take time to get there. So
am I thinking too big for you?
Too
fast?
So these are I love to think on that scale, but I also don't want people to, you know, try something big and say, oh, that was terrible.
Just because it was so much?
Yeah. Yeah, so much without, you know, without a history of trying it. So
I suppose it's kind of like doing a spaghetti sauce. You do a small batch before you do 30 gallons.
That's the plan this year.
All right.
You know, if we can show enough people that it works and that it pencils, and then, you know, then we'll get out there and say, hey, look what we tried.
And
look
next
what we got.
Next year, watch out, baby.
Yeah.
All right. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:43. We'll be back with more from Eddie.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Eddie Tanner. Eddie, for the small boutique farmer, is the stuff that you're talking about viable for them? Are there lessons in there that they can pick up on? Somebody who has 10 acres or less, you know, and boutique probably has a technical definition with the marijuana guys, but I'm thinking the regular guys. Yes. Small, but oh my gosh, it's a lot for one person. That crowd, or are you talking about that next step up where this is their job, this is their career, this is what they do? It's not a weekend thing.
Yeah. So currently, if you look at the specialty crops around our county, around our region, most of them are in that category of smaller scale, less than 10 acres. And, you know, with some outliers, of course, we have some kind of large-scale bulb production and some larger specialty
bulls
crop producers.
In Humboldt County, huh?
but for those, you know...
I'm looking at the Irish print that Wessa did 30 years ago right over your shoulder. Okay, but thick for irony
those,
for me.
Yeah, the small-scale producers, though, can, you know, utilizing sort of all the local markets that we have here, can grow, you know, successful businesses that do support their livelihood and support some employees. That's the model I use on my own farm in Arcata, and it has been successful over the last 15 years in
getting there.
Yeah, so you know, it took some time to build it, but a small piece of land can certainly support a farm livelihood and some employees to boot.
With all these food trucks that are running around, well, rolling around in the area, is that an opportunity that I'm thinking on the retail end of this process, or the consumer end, what's changed? Certainly food trucks, a big difference. And a lot of those folks are trying to focus on those types of crops. If they could do it locally, that's great. Is that a niche that is one that is specialized by, or I guess levered into by a lot of folks, or potentially?
Sure. I think the challenge, you know, the opportunity is that direct marketing from smaller scale farms is, you know, is what keeps those small businesses viable.
Yeah, I pull up in the pickup truck. I've got a case of lettuce in the back and I hand it over to you and move on.
But it's a lot of small sales and a lot of one-on-one interactions, a lot of coordinating between the buyers
Labor.
And the sellers.
Yeah.
That all takes time and phone calls and a willingness on the part of those restaurateurs or, you know, whoever the buyers are to really make all those sort of small individual calls and connections for purchases.
So it is a high hassle
it
approach.
It is. And then, so again, going back to something the North Coast Growers Association is doing with their harvest hub is trying to be a single point of contact. And the opportunity there is that, you know, buyers in our community, and these could be restaurants, food trucks, but also larger buyers like schools, hospitals.
Grocery stores.
Grocery stores, exactly, who haven't had the time and the willingness to really make all those phone calls every week can now have a single point of contact. And so the producers will, you know, let the hub know what they have that is available for sale, and then the buyers will have one point to go to for that. And the goal and the hope is that this is a growth model, that, you know, this simplified connection expands the amount of local purchasing that's happening, and that drives more local production. Which we have a great land base for. We have, you know, we have soil, we have water.
It's here.
It's here. But the, you know, it's a kind of a chicken and egg situation where.
Oh, going back to the farm. Okay. You had used a word, and it triggered for me consistency, the reliability. If you have lettuce today, I need lettuce 52 weeks. Is that something that's possible here, or are you talking then about greenhouses, hydroponics, and things start going sideways real fast?
Yeah, there's definitely a seasonal nature to our production right now, but we also are in a mild winter climate, and so a lot of our specialty crops producers do have high tunnels, greenhouse space, and some of them, even low-tech, fairly inexpensive infrastructure like that, can expand the harvest season quite a bit. And that's something that I have a personal passion for and am, yeah, definitely wanting to talk with more people about.
Very cool. Hey, thanks for coming by. You're better than what's-her-name.
Well, really fun talking with you.
Yes. Yeah. Have fun with the fallout. See everybody tomorrow.